Member Week is here at Lowe's. Don't miss your chance to get up to 40% off hundreds of items like paint, stain, tools, flooring, and more. Shop our exclusive deals happening in-store and online from May 8th through May 14th. Not a member? Join My Lowe's Pro Rewards for free today and get ready to save more. Lowe's, we help you save. Loyalty program subject to terms and conditions. Details at lowes.com/terms. Subject to change.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
None of the characters are, like, incoherent and don't make sense.
Yeah, none of them are random.
The world...
Right.
Screw you. You're going to make that joke every time. And talking to him about the book, he wanted this to be a great intro to someone who hasn't read a lot of epic fantasy.
I can see how he could easily step up in book two. This one felt like a turkey sandwich that was outside the fridge for 48 hours. You know what I mean? It's like you've had it before and you're going like, oh, I've had this before, but also, oh my God.
Welcome, welcome everyone to the Tudor Ramble podcast. My name is Richard.
My name is Austin.
Today, we're talking about a book titled Of Blood and Fire.
Wait, we're doing a book?
A book.
Oh my God. I'm so excited.
By Ryan Cahill. This was our book club of the month for February. If you're interested in hearing our thoughts in a book club setting on it, that's on our Patreon. So you're welcome to check that out down below. And special part about that is we got Ryan Cahill on to come on at the end of our book club to answer questions from all our patrons. It was a ton of fun. Really appreciate having him on.
That's posted on Patreon.
That is posted on Patreon. There. Yes. So.
And that's the author of this book, Ryan Cahill.
Yep.
And he wrote Of Blood and Fire back in 2021, relatively new. It's an indie published book. And there's also a prequel to this book called The Fall, which we also read, but will not be spoiling or talking. This is spoiler free, by the way. So spoiler free for the first 10 minutes, maybe even shorter. We're going to make a nice, quick, rapid review. Rich and I have similar thoughts here. We're going to break down exactly what we think, what people say about it, if you should read it, what kind of reader would like this book. And then we'll talk spoilers, get some details. But it's going to be on the quicker side today.
Also, I do think we can talk about The Fall. I don't think it spoils really. Like, if you've already read A Blood and Fire.
We'll say general thoughts.
Sure.
But in the spoiler-free territory, you're safe.
Understood.
Right now.
Yeah, in the spoiler-free territory, nothing. But we'll talk about it a little later. Yeah.
Quick info on the book. Ryan Cahill, the author, wrote this book in 6 months, and he was 28 years old when he released the book. He's 33 now. I'm saying this is one of the first questions that one of the patrons asked him. They're just curious about the background of the book. He has three books out in the series now. It's called The Bound and the Broken series, and the fourth book is coming.
Yes, soon.
Yeah, arcs are coming.
I believe end of March is when the ebook is dropping.
Really? Okay, so very soon. And the novella, The Fall, it just to give a quick background here, I read the first book of this, Of Blood and Fire, then read The Fall, whereas Rich, you read the prequel, The Fall,
then read Of Blood and Fire.
What would you recommend to people if to start with one or the other?
If the reader I am describing to you sounds like yourself. If you are intrigued by the mystery of a story where you want to know less about the world, you want to discover the world with your characters and you're fine being ignorant of main events, probably wait to read The Fall afterward. Or if you're really a lot more comfortable with a slow burn. If you think a slow burn is more not your style and you want to start off with a punch, you want to know more context, you want a bit more action right out of the gate, I would say read The Fall first. Personally, I read it.
Well said.
I read The Fall first, and I wish I read it after. That's just me.
Fair. That's exactly the way to put it, is you won't know what reading order you'd like. You put it perfectly with, do you want to start off with a bang or end with a bang?
Yeah.
So this book, quick quick spoiler-free just thoughts on, not thoughts, sorry, what the pitch is. This is on Goodreads. I'm going to give the description of the book. Etheria is a land divided by war and mistrust. The High Lords of the South squabble and fight, only kept in check by the Dragon Guard, traitors of a time long past who served the Empire of the North. In the remote villages of southern Etheria, still reeling from the tragic loss of his brother, Kaelin Briar prepares for the Proving, a test of courage and skill that not all survive. But when three strangers arrive in the village of Milltown with a secret they are willing to die for, Kaelin's world is ripped from under him and he is thrust headfirst into a war that has been raging for centuries. There is no prophecy. His coming was not foretold. He bleeds like any man, and bleed he will. Now, from that description there, to give a pitch to who is this book for, this is classic fantasy through and through. Our thumbnail, you'll see Rich on one half saying classic, another half Austin saying, that's me, cliche. So classic or cliche is the big question of this book. To give you a warning of personal feelings, first off, we talk with Ryan Cahill, the author, top tier dude. Top tier guy. And we know he's not watching this review, so we could actually say horrible things about him.
That
and
is
he
true.
Wouldn't know, but I will say,
I like the guy quite a bit.
He was so nice to come on and talk with the patrons. Amazing, amazing guy. I say that because he said he wasn't gonna watch this review because he says he doesn't like watching or reading negative reviews. It's hurtful. that's not an exact quote, but
to give him the fairest context, it's more he doesn't read reviews of like of his book one anymore because at that point it's not really helpful. He's on book four right now.
Yeah.
All the negative criticism he would get from a book one review, it'd be like, yeah, I already fixed that. I've moved on now. It's not helpful anymore.
Exactly. And the people who would like at least this book one to the series, everybody who has read this for the most part from our book club, for example, people were either underwhelmed or whelmed. Some people that also like it, but to set your expectations, this is a classic fantasy. It's very much like Wheel of Time, Aragorn. I'm not comparing because I know you love your Wheel of Time.
Yeah.
But in a way of what to expect of your story beats and your magic and your world building with elves and dwarves. Exactly what you imagine of classic fantasy, this is that. So
with quite direct references. It's if you read The Wheel of Time, if you read things like that where you think, oh, I really like a good homage, I kind of like reading this same type of story again, these same type of characters that you kind of think of the farm boy and all this stuff, then this is right up your alley. But if you're kind of sick of the farm boy, maybe this isn't your best pick.
I would describe it as a faster paced Wheel of Time.
Sure.
It's a faster space. And Levy from our book club had the best description of this book I've ever heard. He says it's Wheel of Time without the woman. And what you mean by that is in Wheel of Time, this is spoiler free. This is in book one stuff, Eye of the World. There's the woman circle and basically part of the discussion in real time, it's the men and women disagreeing, and you see how that plays out in the narrative of, okay, the woman circle thinks one thing and therefore it pushes on the men, and it's bickering and back and forth, and the plot unfolds. While in this book, there's no woman circle, and it's just Kaelin and his guys, Rist and Dan. And it's not that there's not female characters in this. There are, but it's the fast pacedness of it's not. There's not bickering. It's just classic fantasy. Boom, go to destination.
Yes. So let's get right out of the gate.
Yes.
What our overall thoughts? We've teased around enough. I think just by our energy, not our favorite book. So my overall score is a 2.5 out of 5. Very disappointing. But a caveat this with the third book is our friend Coop. He's our admin on our Discord. It's his favorite book ever.
And he
has given a ton of praise and talk to me at least about how the book really does change from book one to book two and also to book three. So I am still reading on, at least I'll be reading on sooner rather than later, just to kind of get the feel for it. But yeah, I was disappointed with the first book, but I'm also not super surprised. So
very fair. I'd say the Stoopy is for Empire of Silence. This is more so on my end. Mm-hmm. So Sun Eater, people who haven't seen our reviews of that, I thought book one of Sun Eater I did not like very much. I thought it was disappointing. But then book two, I gave 5 stars. I was floored by it. And this seems to be one of those series where people unanimously say book one, even if people enjoyed it, which our buddy Coop does. Coop even mm-hmm. says, likes the book. It's cool. It's, you know, it's your typical fantasy. But then after that, everybody says the books level up. And we're saying all that. Ryan's a great guy. But being honest with my review, I gave this a 1.5 star. I thought it was bad. And that's coming from somebody who also doesn't like Wheel of Time. I do not like that. So
take that opinion with a grain of salt of like, you know, the type of reader Austin is.
Know the type of reader I am.
So that's kind of falls in line. Surprising point is how much I love Wheel of Time, and then I still gave it a like 2.5,
which says a lot.
That says my 2.5, I think, says a little bit more than your 1.5.
My 1.5, where it's coming from, I do feel it's more on the line of cliche. I've seen this all before. I've seen it all done better. It's Ryan's first book. I know he probably does get better in the future. I would say, as far as the categories go, what to expect here. And tell me if you disagree what your favorite and least favorite categories mm-hmm. were. I generally didn't like much. However, I'll say the plot was probably the toughest for me to get through. And just because that was the crux of the story and where you've seen all those story beats. Whereas maybe if I had to say there was a best, I would say the characters are likable. But also the prose is, it's not badly written prose either. So if I was to say...
The characters still do have a unique character voices, some more than others.
Yeah,
those are fairly enjoyable. The characters, there's a seed there. You know, I don't love any of the characters, but I was left with especially one character where I'm going, I am genuinely intrigued where Ryan is going to take this character, and I hope it's in a very interesting direction and not a quick wrap up. I'm hoping he does something interesting with it. I have heard he does. So. I'm assuming I'm going to have a fun time with that. But
yeah.
I would agree. Plot is my least favorite category here. I think for the most part, the book is serviceable. Like it's mostly like disappointing, but it all makes sense, where like the characters are mostly fine, but forgettable, but they're not incoherent. None of the characters are like incoherent and don't make sense.
Yeah, none of them are random. The world. Right.
Screw you. You're going to make that joke every time. And it's going to hurt me.
Especially
every
with a book
time.
Like, well, this is, you know,
this is, it's this inspired is appropriate. By Wheel of
Time. Okay.
Yeah.
It felt right.
It was. It still hurts.
The way I describe this, I guess the general criticism, spoiler free, why I don't like this is obviously I find it more cliche, but it as a book, it feels like the characters do what the author feels like they need to do in the plot. Or that the characters, the author's hand is very much in there to get the characters where they need to be. And so I never got immersed. I was always feeling like there was a destination. And honestly, after reading the first chapter, I could have guessed how the whole story went. And that's never fun. So when reading this, a lot of that's cruxing on like, I've seen it before. So a lot of it that, not to reiterate that point, but I definitely don't like it, but I definitely do love the author. So it's in that rocking a hard place of I will give it a second chance for book two, because our buddy Coop says book three is his favorite of all time, and because the author is such a good guy. If I didn't have all that context and wasn't a BookTube, I would just stop as a personal preference, but I'm continuing because of all that context, even though I really didn't like it. So
yeah, that's fair. Yeah. I also think the world building was serviceable but below average, but I think it has a lot of room to improve. Like I think he can, and I'm betting he will, especially after like the prequel book does do quite a bit of heavy lifting for world building. Yeah. Of like, oh, okay, this is a lot more interesting.
Got it.
If that makes sense.
Yeah. Oh, I didn't combine the prequel into my rating for this. Just
I didn't either.
Okay, good. I'm just checking.
I'm just pointing out goes forward in a better direction.
Cool. You want to give a spoiler warning? Spoilers.
Spoilers for Of Blood and Fire by Ryan Cahill. The Bound and the Broken. Am I saying that? This
Bound and the Broken.
This is The Bound and the Broken. Yeah. So
this is your warning. We're going to go through this. And because we don't have as much enthusiasm, it's going to be a quicker review, but we will get detailed as possible so that we cover this thoroughly. Okay.
Yep.
So emotional impact out of 5 stars.
I gave this a 2.75, below average.
1.5 for me, bad, so mimics my overall score.
Yeah, to be fair, it's the reason why I have it probably higher than you is it was a generally easy read, and I wasn't like hating the time. It compared this to something like Wind and Truth, where I wanted to put it down so many times. This one, it was easy to read. I liked what, like, the characters weren't unlikable. And so I was not thrilled, but also wasn't hating my life while reading it. And so it's like, it's below average for me.
My favorite part, or I guess the good moments was I liked how Dan and Caitlin had their bets. They felt like friends.
They were cool. They were actually genuinely good friends.
Yeah.
And so
I was envious. I was like, what's that like?
Yeah.
It's like, oh, that's so
maybe awesome. You'll find out one of these days. One day. Hey, if you would actually meet up with Coop and I for lunch, but you know, I know you just really hate Coop, and so you always avoid us.
That's the reason I don't like the book, because Coop likes the book.
That is true.
So when we're talking about emotional impact, we're looking for what emotions it going for, and what moments was that evoked, or did you get the opposite of it?
I mean, it's going for a combination of, I would say, whimsy and adventure. Right? I mean, you're supposed to be a little bit more like in wonder of the world, trying to like invoke your curiosity, and then a little bit of your, you know, young hero's adventure, right? I mean, it does try and go for a bit more of the tragic angle, of course. I think it actually something it the book does better than others in its same lane is how they handle how Caitlin processes the death of his family is better than a lot of other stories that try and do this, where
death of some of his family.
That is true. He thinks death of all of his family. It's not all of them.
Ella's alive. Also, the
mother's alive.
The mother's got to be alive.
100% yeah. Alive. But anyway, that's beside the point.
Death of his dad for sure.
Death of his dad for sure.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Sword go in. Mm-hmm. We saw it. But point is, typically with the kind of farm boy trope is, you know, parents die, like everything from his hometown kind of dies and he has to leave home and, you know, become a man, all this stuff, where you just kind of see the town forgotten and like he's now off on bigger, better adventures. And so you forget about the family. I like for the whole story, like this, it does affect him. It affects him even toward the end, just the little moments of rage or deep sorrow, and he's like trying to pack it back down, his friend's trying to bring him out of his shell. That's actually pretty well done for an emotional impact side of things. Like I felt it sometimes, especially later on in the book, of how that kept coming up. So I think that was pretty well done, and I'm hoping it carries forward even further.
When talking about his brother as well, he says Caitlin's brother died before we saw the book.
Yeah.
Or before the book started. Mm-hmm. And some of that affects him. And then the death of his father and him thinking back to that and then getting split up with his friends. And so is it a lot of that remorse, the guilt you feel when he feels?
Especially of he lost all of his. I believe the sequence. Am I right on the sequence of events of he loses his entire family? He loses his family, then he loses Wrist, or is it the other way around?
No, you're right. Family, yeah. Then Wrist.
So he loses all of them and feels responsible to some degree, understandably so, of due to his choices, these soldiers come in and kill his family just to try and find him. It feels, of course, responsible for that, and then decides to leave Wrist, trusting in, what is his name? Eric, right?
Sorry, you're talking about
the brother, son? The brother, the person who leaves Wrist behind because he got beaten by a Fade ripoff.
Gotcha. Yeah, I believe it was Eric because it was Oswin that he had two kids, Eric, and what was the other kid's name? Eric and, but it was one of those kids. I believe it was Eric.
Eric and Asen?
No, that's the father. But you might be right. Yes. But that character, yes.
Yes.
Okay.
So, I don't know. I can definitely, it's a good start. It's definitely not as interesting in book one, but I'm hoping it goes more into the More into that later on. Mm-hmm. What else was this book trying to go for?
I think, right, it's that classic fantasy vibe, and people kind of know what you're talking about when you say that.
Yeah.
Fantasy, fantastical, the cozy.
Yeah.
But and not that there's death and remorse, so it's not in that cozy, but I guess when you pick up this book, he might have been trying to evoke the feeling of familiarity.
Oh, he definitely was. Talking to him about the book, he wanted this to be a great intro to someone who hasn't read a lot of epic fantasy.
We should have said that in spoiler free. That
we probably should have.
Yeah.
But if you have not, so it's for one of two readers of someone who has not read a lot of epic fantasy, but wants that introduction to feel a part of the, you know, be a part of the club of everyone else who's read a bunch of epic fantasy and knows this kind of feel. Here's a good intro. Or the people who just really like the feel of classic fantasy and want to read it again. Yeah. They just want to read a remix of the same thing.
Yeah. I think for emotional impact, this is one of those where this is intertwined with plot quite a lot. And I like to focus on a specific scene when we're going, okay, did the emotion actually evoke that or did it do the opposite? Because what we're judging is intended versus opposite outburst, that kind of thing. Was it like the worst thing in the world? No. But I, every time going to the book, didn't want to continue, didn't want to keep reading. A lot of that is, I guess, a moment you could pick out is the egg hatch scene. And that you see that you see that in every dragon type story where the egg hatches and the person's a dragon rider. And that was very underwhelming for the thing that the book is going for. It kind of just happened one night and then the connection was made and the dragon is there. It, as I'm describing it, that's how it felt reading it.
It quite literally was just,
oh, how about
now? Why not now?
Do it now. Go to the egg. Unhatching. But to put that in a beat of the entire story is told in this. Okay, we have our three friends, Matt, Perrin, and Rent. Sorry, I mean Kaelin, Rist, and Dan. sorry. But you have your three characters with their distinct... I'll save that stuff for characters. But you have your three characters who have to go to this proving of sorts. You have to grow up and get tested by your town. They go do the proving thing. They get confronted by an orcs of some kind, which is the Urax in this case. And then after that and come back, well, their world changes and upside down because things larger than they know are trouble comes to town. Parent dies, have to leave town. The group gets split. Turns out he's also a dragon rider.
His other friend's a magician.
The other friend's the jokester. I mean, the dragon hatches. He's a dragon, right? All this stuff is just, you could, to me, okay, I see you. All right. Yeah. I got it. So a lot, and I want to emphasize this too, because Scott made a great point. Scott from our Patreon said there's some adult language in here, and this is definitely geared toward adult readers. I would be less critical of it if it was geared toward a younger audience. I think the fact that it is geared toward a more mature audience makes me more critical of, like, okay, I think an adult or somebody reading this would be able to expect more out of the work that's given. And I mean that with there's more cliche books that are for like middle grade or YA that would be less harsh to, because I could be like, okay, they're leaning into the audience and the tropes of the genre for the audience. Whereas this was geared toward adults, which would be more veteran fantasy readers as well. So I think it didn't serve me as the audience clearly, but I'm just being a little harsher because of that as well. But to get the egg hatch is one scene, but really any scene to bring up is just like, oh, I didn't feel the emotion. So there wasn't a moment for me. I guess the one positive I could say is it was a quicker read and it didn't stay too long. Like the proving was quick and they moved along out of there quick. It got to all those story beats quicker than Wheel of Time did. So it has that going for it for my taste.
Yeah. The main thing that kept me going, so in comparison to Wheel of Time, I think even Eye of the World, the characters were better. Like the trio, like I don't think, like Rand, no, in Eye of the World, but like Perrin was the really interesting character that carried me through that first book, especially. And Rand was interesting at the end. But that But I was far more invested in their characters and where they're going, and also just the setup of what Rand is, I think, is more compelling. Like, is that spoilers? Yeah, it is.
Mute that. Sorry, Nick. How many times he's had to
I forget that not everyone's read Wheel of Time. But no, I liked the characters in Wheel of Time more than this, but this was faster. You're right. It didn't overstay its welcome for me, and pretty quick turnaround.
Yeah.
Do you want to move on to thought-provokingness?
Yeah, I want to do that last thing on this. I had more notes, but I won't spit all this out. You can look up online because one of our patrons also provided this. Just a one-to-one example of Aragorn plot points to this, and it does follow that trajectory, but I won't beat that to death. So let's go to
plot, not emotional impact.
Yes, that does go into that. You're right. So thought provokingness.
Yeah. 2.75 for me, below average. The reason I put it there and not maybe lower is I don't think it's going for much either.
I slightly disagree. I'll say 1.5 bad, just because I think it goes for one thing, and I was so disappointed, and like I was just like, oh, it does try to go for something. And that's an interesting, that's how I felt.
What is it going for that you think really missed the mark?
I think the whole unique spin on the book, and kind of, I mean, it says it in the blurb as well, is it's actually not a prophecy. And the theme or message of this book, and it doesn't answer it completely, we'll see where Caelan goes, but has you going, okay, Caelan gets to the end here, and he's not the prophesized dragon rider. He's not the chosen one. He has to earn it and actually be respected and a good person. Like the elves and all that, they actually have to be behind Caelan for who he is, not just because he's the prophesized one. You don't just follow them because they're a prophecy, but he has to be the good person. So I think that's what the message is going for as far as prophecy. It's actually not a prophecy. You got to have a good heart. And that to me, it's not like it was an awful and like decrepit and, oh my God, I'm so insulted by that message. It's just one of those things of
in practice, I don't think the book handles that as well, where sure, Caelan's not the prophesized one, there is no prophecy, but there might as well be. The uniqueness of his position, of he is the only free dragon rider, and also the dragon that he's picked has never bonded a human before ever. It's like one from the cold north. You might as well be the prophesized one, and he does kick everything off. He's used like he's the prophesized one. Mm-hmm. So, to me, it's a distinction without a difference.
And on top of that, maybe this will change in book two, Caelan's personality, I don't know. But I'm never questioning going, man, is he going to deserve the honor and respect of the elves and everybody? Caelan seems like a good dude.
Yeah,
he seems like he deserves the support.
What is a good way to do, like, the prophecy trope? What actually makes that work? Like, it was used for a reason. Like, nowadays people just don't like prophecies in general in their stories. Like, it is tend to see as a cliche rather than a trope or something to emulate.
Or
they always try and subvert it. Wheel of Time has a twist on the prophecy, and I think an interesting one where I enjoy it more. But I think when you do a prophecy, like, the point of a prophecy is, like, the burden of expectations is generally the positive aspect of it. If you take someone who clearly doesn't live up to the prophecy and has now been burdened with the weight of greatness, you have to live up to it. And what makes that really good is you see a character that is prophesized for greatness and you see them fail over and over, and people going like, really, you're the prophesized one? And then you get that righteous indignation when he actually succeeds, and like, yeah, he is the prophesized one. It's cathartic in that way. But
I knew this protagonist would do it. It does feel good.
You have to have those moments of like real failure, and then not just the character fails, but other characters around them look at the guy like going, really? This is your prophesized one?
Yeah.
Ugh. And then you got your cool underdog story, and it's fun. Mm-hmm. And again, now how does this one do it? In many ways, it not being a prophecy kind of takes away some of the excitement, because there's no prophecy. That means there's less expectations. Like, what expectation is Kalen being burdened with? He wants to go save his friend, and he wants, like, that's about it. Like, what driving factor is it? I don't think there's not. Like, I think the story in book one would be more interesting if it was a prophecy, in all honesty.
Yeah, in a case like this, for people that don't know, when we rate something, we can also say NA, not rate. Mm-hmm. If it didn't have that part of the book, I would have not rated this category. Because in that case, I would have thought, okay, it's not worthy to rate, because to give someone the expectation of when you pick up this book, I'm give that low rating in my head is when I look back and think, I'll go, oh yeah, it went for something and didn't lead to anything interesting. Now, if it just went straight classic fantasy and was going for that, my emotion's going to be low, but I just would rescind or just neglect to say, give a rating at all to this, because some books just don't go for that. And that's totally fine. You don't have to be a thought-provoking book, but I think this does try to take that unique spin. And I would never, I wouldn't recommend the book going like, man, look at this. Yeah. Think about this one.
I think you can also say the book is going for like the theme overall of responsibility of every character kind of going of what's
fair. Yeah.
What do they owe to others? What is your duty? Then there's, I think one of the more interesting chapters was, Eric or the brother of Dan? Dan's hanging around him. He's the one that left Wrist. I'm trying to remember his name. But you get a tiny, tiny POV of his frustration of seeing Kalen, like, kind of just waltz in here and take the dragon, take the glory and everything, and just his envy, but ultimately still having a duty of responsibility for the fight, even if he's no longer like the main character anymore, which is like, okay, that's a little nugget. I was like, okay, let's see where this grows. Mm-hmm. Not enough in this book, but we'll see how that goes.
There's promise. Like, I could see how it can get better.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Anything else on thought provoking?
Yeah, that was about it.
Okay. Well, we'll go on to characters.
Characters. Okay.
Characters. What do you think out of 5 stars?
This is real 3. I'm just kind of neutral about it. I don't have particularly strong feelings either way.
So it's higher than my prior two, but I'm still giving 1.75. That means very flawed on ours. I see why you give it a 3, is it because they're all replaceable? And you're like, yeah, you've seen them before, but they're not like awful characters.
Yeah. Thing is, I think it's done with enough competence of they do have their own unique voices in some more than others. Like, I think Dan and Wrist, Kalen, the focus on them, they all feel.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
The unique, the banter between them is good. I'm starting.
That is my favorite character moments. I'll give you that. Know what I mean? Kalen and Danner.
The rest, like even the side characters, I liked the Verandier family. I think had a bit more identity than I expected, because they're the people that bring our heroes into the fight, into the adventure. And normally that's like one character, you know, the wise old mentor. Now we got like a family. Like, you had the wise old mentor, but then his two sons. It's like the dynamic between the family is a little bit more interesting and fun to follow. But they're I'm not super excited, but also they're done well. They could be replaced, but they're done competently well.
And Aswan, he has a past. He was a dragon rider.
Yeah.
In his past. And I shouldn't say anything about prequel, but we'll Aswan has a past, and we figure out a little bit about the mystery behind him in this book. Now, I mean, what would you say? Where does it end? I'm trying to distinguish between this and the prequel. How much do we know about Aswan by the end?
I mean, even in the prequel, like it's...
It is clear he was a dragon rider.
He was a dragon rider. Yeah. Okay, yeah. That was stated in the book.
Okay.
So...
Yeah, so you have a lot with these characters. We obviously have Kaelin, Rist, Dan, our main three, and Ella. Ella as well, and her point of view.
Hers was actually probably a highlight for me of difference. I just kind of like had some of the most promise, and compared to like, you know, our three boys of like, I've seen this before. I liked just her running off their boyfriend, wanting to start this new life. That was enough for me of, okay, I wonder what the author's going to do with this character.
Okay.
That was it. Like, I mean, it was just not as important, but I was also the most intrigued with her of where the story's going to go. Okay. It doesn't go anywhere particularly here, like in the book, but by the end, I like where it ends of... Mm. She's got the animal companion, she's got the dog, and she's going, like, trying to make a life for herself now. And for some reason, she left home for her boyfriend, but then, or, I don't know, but her man, but decided to not go home. Like, something is still calling her of, like, and part of that is the tragedy of, like, doesn't feel like she can go home. So... That's all good. All good stuff there. And I hear that she gets a lot of love in book two.
Okay.
So.
Okay. And book two, we do know there's more point of views than just Kaelin's. Yes. So it expands. Got it. Well, I think Ryan said there's 87% of this book was Kaelin's point of view.
Mm-hmm.
So there was obviously Ella. We had other point of views, but then you get a lot more in the future. But yeah, so for the characters here, Kaelin, Dan, Rist, I think we'd both. Yeah, go ahead.
What was your most disappointed? So you said very disappointed.
Very flawed, I said.
Very flawed. Yeah. What is the biggest flaws for the characters?
So we can go individual. I know we're both not enthused to like break down like we do with other books, so I'll give general thought, then we can maybe hit one. But when, you know, they're definitely all replaceable characters where you've seen these type of archetypes. But then the layer after that for me is like when I would trend down for one star, we mean incoherent, but I kind of like incoherent / unrealized. In that kind of realm. Mm-hmm. And I just think it pushes more toward they don't feel real because it feels like the author is making them make decisions. Mm. Which, Ryan looked back when he was writing this book too and said, like, sure, he'd like to change things, but he's gone beyond this. This is not helpful for Ryan. He's, I'm sure, way, way better now. But mm-hmm. for, it's a cool way to look at some of these scenes of does it feel like the character, does it feel like the author? And there's, I think you brought up this scene where, when Rist and them get split up.
Yeah, that's one of the scenes that bothered me the most.
So why'd that scene bother you, for example?
To give context, Kaelin, Dan, Rist, they're trying to escape the city. The city guard, you know, the soldiers are after them, and they get into a scuffle and fight. Kaelin, Dan, and the rest kind of win their fight, and they're starting to run off, and then they turn around and go like, oh, Rist is still fighting, and Rist and the other Verandir brother is fighting with them, and Kaelin's like, let's go back and help them. and the rest are like, no, we don't worry. My brother can handle it. He'll save them. They'll find another way out, but we have to like go. And that whole scene just doesn't make sense because if like they were so nonchalant about it of, nah, they'll be fine. And they were just so casual about it. Like, okay, if they're going to be fine, why don't you just go help and then you all go together? Like, it just makes it all quicker. Why do you have to separate? And it was very much author hand of, I need to get them to separate. Rather than like more, I think one of two, honestly, you really need one or two areas of either Rist made a poor decision or something that actually separates them, or that fade or whatever. I forgot what Ryan calls fades in his novels.
it's a fade. Odax?
No,
the flying.
No, the one that like has black eyes. And,
oh, okay. Oh,
remember, can't really be stabbed.
Yes.
It's a fade.
Yep.
It's from Wheel of Time. It is a fade. Anyway, point being, that should have appeared in that scene of that. That's what separates them. And then them leaving wrists behind is more of like an actual need.
They had to.
Like, we can't fight that thing. We have to go. And then you get that guilt. Then you get the real, like, no, we really did leave them.
Mm-hmm.
But then that would be an actual reason to leave rather than like.
But then there's also no conflict when he leaves. He thinks about wrists and like, oh, dang, he's gone. But there's not as much conflict involved because they're like, we had to leave is what Kalen says in his head. It's explained that the decisions were thought out, like, wrist is over there, and it's logicked through. It is logicked through being like, oh, Kalen and them do have to go the separate way.
But I just don't think the logic is sound. It doesn't make sense to me.
The bad character part about it is Kalen just saw. So Kalen's brother died before this book started. He just saw his father die in front of him. His mother apparently burnt, and Ella, he thinks, is dead as well. At this point, when they're split up and it's not something like a fade there, what I feel Kalen's character decision would be is, since seeing all that and your friends are your only family left, like, no, I'm leaving nobody behind.
Yeah.
F that. I'm going to. So
he was convinced to leave and he just shouldn't.
Maybe he could have been pulled away or something just to show it didn't make sense for his character at that moment to do that. So what I mean by the plot here, and I mean this for characters, is the plot moved, be it making the characters do what they had to do in order to get forward. So on one hand, they were replaceable characters, but on the next, it felt like we were being force-fed some things for the characters to do. One tiny example, because there's plenty throughout the novel, but maybe this should be more of a prose thing, but I'll say it in a characters thing. When it's being revealed to Kalen the past of Asuan, and finding out that he was a dragon rider, what his past name was, even some of the dialogue going back and forth is taught. Kalen just asks the questions straight up to feed in the information. So it's a lot of that info dumpy and the characters asking questions more so for the reader's sake than for the character's sake. So often it feels like the character is bringing up things big. Oh, the reader should know this at this point. So the character asks the question so that I get the information. So that's more so of a thing of me going like, oh, the character, sure, they're asking and being inquisitive. I get it. But a more natural way to go about providing that information wouldn't be like question, answer, question, answer, question, answer. And so a lot of those moments also felt the same.
It worked one time particularly well.
Yeah.
Leaving Rist and all. Basically, after he loses his whole family, of him going like, I've just lost my entire family because of the mess that we've been dragged into by you guys. You're going to tell me what the fuck is going on right now. Like, none of this mystery bullshit. You're telling me now, like, yes. I lost my family over what's in that goddamn bag. What the hell is that?
Yeah.
That's a good point.
I'll give you that.
That's a logical point of like,
I want to know.
My family died because of that mystery bag.
Tell me.
What the hell is in there? And then they told him.
Agreed.
Fair point.
I'll give you that. And Dan's obviously your funny, witty guy. Rist is he's studious. He's into the studies.
He's he's a little bit of a nerd.
Okay, so anything else you want to talk about, specific characters? Sorry for being a bummer this episode.
Yeah.
Do you have any?
I'm neutral on it. It's okay. Quite literally just a toss-up for me.
Plot.
This is my lowest category.
Yep.
I got it at a 2. I think it's flawed.
I have it at a 1.5. Bad. It's not lower than my emotion or the themes, but it's down there with them. The one benefit I give is the pace. It moves.
Sure.
And it doesn't stay too long in any of the spots. I have to give some credit for the pacing. So it moved well.
I would agree. However.
However, you gotta start doing more. Though that's your classic line. Democracy is cringe is your second tagline. Your first is, you know, I really like that.
However, yeah. The biggest problem with the plot is something that the creators of South Park talked about, and we've talked about previously before.
Yep,
your plot should be. This happened, therefore this happened, rather than you need to have some consequence from scene to scene rather than just, and then this happened, And then this happened. And then this happened. And that was the entire plot, was just a sequence of and then, and then, and then.
Yeah.
There was one particular moment of consequence for the character's decision. So, like, Kaylin deciding to fight the guards, or fight the soldiers, for his new friends that he made in the bar. That was the moment of decision for him, where the rest of the plot happens because they're like, he fought the guards, therefore he has to leave. Like, that was the moment of consequence. Everything before that and everything really after that, just the stuff happens to him, and, you know, new character shows up and lead you on to the next thing. And then we moved on to the next thing. So yeah, I thought it was pretty flawed.
Yeah, a lot of that too. How much do you put in when you're thinking about the plot? Is predictability a thing you consider at all?
It's a factor, but if it's completely predictable, it's not necessarily like going to get, oh, it's bad.
If it's
bad.
A fun predictable.
Yeah, exactly. If it's a fun predictable.
Right.
Yeah.
I guess I'll start. I said a lot of how I feel about the plot and the emotions just because of how the book was, what was presented on page. To say something specific about plot, because we're talking about promise, progress, payoff, what is set up, how do you get there, what's the eureka moment. From the get-go, you are promised, hey, this is classic fantasy. You get what you expect. The progress to get to our finale, where I guess, how would you describe our finale? We have Kaylin is being pressured from multiple sides. There is a grander war outside on the ruin, which, no, of course, we don't get payoff on the war itself. This is more of a book to set up, hey, there's a larger war, and Kaylin's our guy. It's not a prophecy, but a lot of people are going to try to pull strings with Kaylin. Mm-hmm. And we get the elves involved and the dwarves, and we're the dwarves now at the end of the book. And I guess, what payoff were you expecting when the book started, and did it deliver that for you?
On a technical basis, yeah. I mean, but the ending for me is like, it ends with final battle. Okay. It's just kind of what you expect, yeah. Okay, here's something that I'm really hoping it goes forward with. Yeah. And the amount of fantasy stories where you have your main human character and then, like, the love interest is, like, you know, the beautiful elf woman. Like,
Naturally,
it's just kind of how it is. But there was the moment between Kaylin and the dwarven queen. Like, they see, like, you know, of course, he barges through the door when she's naked, but then all the kind of, like, flirting afterward, and there's some kind of connection there. I'm going, like, please, for once, have the romance between, like, a dwarf and human. I'd like that. Just, it's something different. I kind of want that. Like, just as a, just a,
the dwarves need a leg up. Thank you. thank you. I'm gonna use that one.
that was the one, like, twist of going, yeah, dwarf lady guy. Like, that's, I just wanted that. That was my hope, that it's not just default elf number 37. So,
yeah, there you
I
go.
I don't know if that's really related to plot, but that
I
was,
feel like it's necessary.
That felt necessary to me. I had hope that it'll be different in book two. That's a summary of this whole review. I have hope it'll be different in book two.
And apologies, we're not exploring the plot or like we do with other books as we deep dive. I do think this is one of those books where it's what you see is what you get.
There's not much to further explore, especially because I have heard that as you, like, on a reread, there's more stuff in here, apparently, that we're just kind of not catching.
Yeah. And that's where it's coming from here, is the since the plot is what you see is what you get, there's nothing as reviewers that is what meat to talk about in this section other than the plot is there. And there is a lot of and-thens, and we go from the stereotypically bullying scene in the beginning, the choosing dragon egg, parents dead, go adventure with friends, split the group, larger adventure. That's the plot.
Yeah.
But I will say a positive note because, again, paced well enough to where I'm thinking with future books, especially him being a better writer in the future, him mm-hmm. having more plot threads and more character point of views. I imagine that the pace he has for this book with a more tight narrative and fixing some of the flaws in this one, I could see how he could easily step up in book two.
Well, especially diverting away from like completely recycled tropes, where adds his own spice and flavor to it of maybe not as predictable, maybe make the characters a little bit more three-dimensioned, where we got maybe nuggets of where their characters could possibly go, particularly with Wrist. I think he's one of the characters I'm most interested in. I'm hoping we start to see this rivalry between friends and what on the other side of the war, and he's not just, you know, rescued immediately in book two.
Yeah.
That's what I personally hope, but the same thing with plenty of the other characters. I'm hoping there's a lot more development and I'll grow to really like them.
Fair.
But also a plot. I'm hoping that we see something a bit more non-standard, I guess, where, yeah, you can't just predict it all from page one.
Page one, yeah. That really does turn to drag for my overall rating. So like you were saying beforehand, I like some novelty in my novels.
Yeah.
Just a little of that.
I don't mind having a turkey sandwich with cheese and mustard for lunch basically every day. I am perfectly satisfied with that as my lunch.
This one felt like a turkey sandwich that was outside the fridge for 48 hours. You know what I mean? It's like you've had it before and you're going like, oh, I've had this before, but also, oh my God, that was not refrigerated.
This is like your, ooh, this is the, an Italian sub with like olives from, like an everything Italian sub from Subway that like you had half of it before when it was fresh and then you put the other half in the fridge. And you're not even like letting it get to room temperature. Like you're eating it straight from
the
fridge.
You're just raw dogging. Oh, dude.
Right from the fridge. And you get like a real cold olive in that first. Like it's just, you know what I mean?
Yeah. The pasta from Olive Garden. Not even left over.
That's too bad. I like more than that.
Okay. Maybe that's how I felt.
Yeah, fair enough.
World building. What'd you give out of 5 stars?
2.75 for
1.5 for me.
Below average. I think it's serviceable, but and nothing's particularly broken. This is probably where I could be convinced to lower it further. But here's the thing. Going into the fall, now maybe that's partly why my score is a little higher, is reading the fall first.
Hmm.
Does a lot for world building. It does quite a bit of like promises of like, oh, there is a more greater history behind here.
I rated it before I read The Fall too.
Yeah. And I mean, you gotta admit, it's better.
Oh, The Fall is better. Yeah.
Yeah. So I direct improvement.
I'm not going to spoil The Fall. For me, it was definitely better, action packed. I didn't have the why for why I should care yet mm-hmm. for The Fall. So it was more so why should I care? But oh, cool. But why?
So maybe that's influencing my world building score, but
We have the magic systems very similar to Wheel of Time.
It's of almost everything in the book, that's probably like the most just taken from Wheel of Time.
It just pulls from the magic system. It's described similarly how it's summoned. Yep. Also, it's called the spark, right? And then you have your elves, your dragons, your giants, your dwarves, and it relies on all the other fantasy built up images you have of those to build those characters. For me, the issue is we're going 5 stars, you forget reality, you're so immersed, and 1 star is no immersion at all. So when I think of this book, it just blends with like, I'm not transported in the world like at all. I'm just like, okay, it's fantasy stuff. I feel bad because all the criticisms are like the same for this, so I'm being very unoriginal as well. Yeah, it's
I understand your point. Thing is, that's what a lot of people feel about Lord of the Rings right now. Of someone who's read a lot of modern fantasy and then has read a bunch of stuff or watched all these different movies and then goes back to read Lord of the Rings for the first time and feels like, ah, unoriginal.
Those people are wrong.
They are wrong. Yeah. But I've heard that complaint of it, like people saying, oh, it feels unoriginal because I've read all this other stuff. It's like, one, it's wrong, but two, yeah, it's the reverse order. Everything was built off of Lord of the Rings mm-hmm. versus this was built off the back of Aragorn and Wheel of Time, mm-hmm. which Wheel of Time was built off the backs of Lord of the Rings and Dune.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. Unoriginal, but again, seeds to grow, but you can't give book one credit for where it's going to be. It didn't have enough interesting questions to get me to ask more about the world, which is, I think, the like why I'm giving it below average. I wasn't particularly immersed really well, but I wasn't taken out.
That's fair. I think with some of the descriptions of the places and hairstyles and peoples also kind of blended together for me. There's the one city that you could smell homemade bread, and there was they had a lot of cozy feel to that city, and I just remember that was described and went, oh, neat. So it's they were described. I got it.
The one place where it starts to become a bit more unique looking was definitely the Dwarven city. Like
that was different.
Like oh, they have monorails. Okay. Like
yeah,
cool. Like tunnels connecting their different cities via magic monorail thing.
Neat.
Yeah. It's like cool. We're starting to get a little bit more novelty here.
Yes. Yes. Did you want to go on to pros?
Yeah.
Pros. What'd you give out of 5 stars?
Yeah, I'm real neutral on it. A 3.
I'm a 2.25 stars. Very disappointed, but that's my highest rating. That is.
The character voices was done fine. I think probably a highlight of the story is the dialogue, because I say that with the sense of I've read way worse dialogue. That's why I'm not like I know the average.
You're coming hot off of Acomef.
Yeah. Oh, it could be a lot worse. There was never a point. Actually, no. When it's tied almost directly to a, I feel, forced plot moment, the dialogue, I think, suffers. Of all that dialogue scenes with leaving Rist behind felt very inorganic. Of that, how they're having this, like, logical debate in the middle of, like, on one hand, it's supposed to be very high-tense situation that they have to leave Rist behind because they're being chased. And so, okay, we have that. But then they're having this whole logical debate, right? And like, you could have just not said anything and just gone help him by the time you're done with this conversation. Like, you would have saved time. But it felt like the author going like, oh, I know this doesn't make sense. I'm going to have to over-explain it and like logic it away. But yeah, overall, neutral.
I always like to pull out some quotes from the book.
Yeah.
We'll pull up to a random page because I have just more specific quotes here and why I put very disappointed. What we're rating with pros, it's like, how are we to tell what's good and bad? We're saying mm-hmm. 5 stars, irreplaceable. This author has a voice of their own and it's super well written. 1 star is distracting, like keeps taking you out. I was distracted multiple times, but there was also solid descriptions in here of movements. And he was...
The
doing
action
a solid job with describing. I could visualize what people were doing mm-hmm. and where people were. And that's a hard thing to do just to even know, okay, this has been said multiple times when we talk about pros, but just to have to present the stage and for the reader to remember who's in the room.
Where are they? How far away are they from another character? Putting time, like how long, how much time has passed, just, mm-hmm. yeah.
But for on the negative side for me, it was a lot of cliche lines as well and descriptors. One quote is that everything seemed to move in slow motion. That would happen during action scenes of always describing things of like, everything started to go in slow motion when describing an intense thing happening. Another one, this was in chapter 17, for example, says, in quotes, Kaelin allowed himself to release the breath he wasn't aware he had been holding. I mean, how many times have you heard that line of breath you haven't been holding? And I already talked about some of the dialogue portions of asking the questions and kind of info dumping that way. But I'll be fair and I guess pull up a random paragraph.
Go ahead.
Or I guess let's...
While you find something, I do want to mention, and this was a joke we had with Ryan here, where there was a particular moment where the sword play was initially talked about and they said... started to go into the names of sword forms of going like, oh yeah, I could go into bear, crouching tiger, and go into crane, cutting the wind. And they start that and then immediately go into, okay, now I'm actually going to describe how the fight scene looks. And it's a reference to Wheel of Time and how Robert Jordan doesn't actually... very rarely with the sword fighting actually describe the actual sword forms. He just gives
the widow's
them
a, weeping mantis.
Like, he just gives them a random name. Here's the thing. It worked for me. I don't know. It shouldn't work. He got away with it. The mad lad. He just did it. And I was in for the ride. I think the main thing is it was unique of like, you had that part, which fun words and describe it like I can imagine my head, but then Robert Jordan still made the time of other fight scenes actually describe it. It's like, okay, fair enough. You're not just doing it to be completely lazy. You can actually write a fight scene, Robert Jordan.
Yeah,
good. And so that was a joke in this book of like, yeah, it's a reference to the Wheel of Time, and then showing that I'm not doing that. Like, I'm actually going to describe the swords and fight scenes.
Nice. So. That was confirmed in the book club with Ryan.
So
yeah.
That was a little dig at Wheel of Time.
This is just the beginning of chapter 16. I'll say the first two paragraphs, get a vibe of the prose. The setting sun cast a warm glow over the city. The yellow-orange rays splashing down over the smooth gray stone of the buildings made Kaelin look so magical. Ella had spent the day exploring the endless markets across the city. She had never seen the likes of it. Entire squares of market stalls dedicated entirely to different colors of silks, broad streets full of merchants selling scarves, dresses, and hats of all varieties. There were packed colonnades of hawkers flogging everything that Ella never knew she didn't need. She could spend days roaming the city streets and never come close to seeing everything there was to see. Just to give you a vibe of the city and that type of world, but more so the prose. So, that is A Blood and Fire by Ryan Cahill. And I guess, in total, this was the most chill review. Our least emotive. Our least oppressive. We just kind
of... amount of low scores you gave, it doesn't come across as, like... Compare this to our Wind and Truth of... It hurt me of how bad it was.
I mean, it's also an ending, yeah.
Yeah, where this, I'm just...
My rating did lower from Wind and Truth, by the way.
Good.
Significantly.
Good. That's important.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, this didn't offend me. It was easy to read. And the big reason is, I didn't have a big desire to like pick up and read the book when I put it down. But when I got started, I didn't have the desire to like turn it off.
Oh, that's awesome. Eh. Yeah. I think I'm valuing my time way too much. You are you're accurately rating things. I'm being too egotistical about my time because I'm reading this going like, I would rather spend my time doing something else. 1.5. And yeah. So
now I wonder if that's a factor of me sitting. I listened to this through the audiobook. So I'm in the car. I'm doing this while I'm doing errands and I'm just, whatever. I'm having a time. Mm-hmm. It's fine. Doing this while I'm doing chores. And it goes along.
Yeah.
Enjoyable enough in the moment.
Yeah.
If I had to like sit down and dedicate like, okay, I'm gonna sit for 3 hours out of my day to just read the book, maybe I would feel a little differently about it.
Audiobooks are helping book review scores.
Maybe.
Because if you had to sit down and physically read it and you couldn't do your chores, you couldn't hang with your friends, you had to read the book, you'd feel a little bit more animosity.
Maybe so.
I don't know. I did also audiobook it, so yeah. It's not like my time was literally wasted. But yeah, that is our review of A Blood and Fire by Ryan Kyle. Tell us what you thought and add some more substance in the comments, because this one we're lacking.
Yeah, I don't know when we'll get to book two, but I hope it is sooner rather than later. And we won't do a Sun Eater thing of where, how long was it between
book one and... It was only 8 months, I think.
It won't be 8 months. I can hopefully promise that, maybe. I intend to read it sooner. I don't know about Austin. No idea.
It's going to be one of those things eventually, again. Yeah. But I really am not rushing. But... You read it. And
I will let
me know.
I will more than likely read it before Austin, and I will let you know if you need to.
Thank you.
Push that calendar up.
Okay.
All right.
All right, everybody. That's been another review. We'll see you next episode.
Bye, everyone.
Bye bye.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.